We get things underway in this hour by welcoming into the program our friend Colin Fleming, whose wonderful new book, Meatheads Say the Realest Things, is available right now wherever you buy quality books. Get your hands on it. You're going to laugh out loud. You're going to smile. You'll be a better person just for reading it. I can tell you because I've done it, and I was pretty good before, but I'm so much better now. Colin, good to have you with us.
And we foregather once again, my friend.
Yes, indeed.
They said erroneously that you could not be improved, and yet there we have it. So miracles are alive and well. Not miracles, maybe just kind of like lesser miracles in 2020.
You ran those greasy winterized steps at BC today. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I had heard from a reliable source in most other matters that those stairs are heated. And I'm looking at these stairs when it was warmer out thinking, well, I don't know a lot about gadgetry. Maybe they're like some coils or something under there, but they look like stairs that would have been, oh, I don't know, of the same like stairs you would have seen in the 1700s. So I thought probably not. Well, let's suffice it to say that is an urban legend, I think I can say, because I was taking them one at a time. They were cold, they were wet, they were slick, but I ran those bad boys 10 times without pause. And Kimball, this might be the most important thing.
Yes.
Not to implicate you in my lasciviousness, but some hot college girls said, you got this. And I was thinking to myself, I do. And with a little luck, maybe we can all get each other. But I didn't say that because...
It's okay to think it, though, right?
Oh, it's okay to think a lot of things, my friend.
There you go. There you go. Ah, yes. Oh, to be young and carefree, which to me, you are, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. Oh, and I meant to say, if you think that I'm not picking up on this, like I'm one of those people, and you see a photo and I start to look fat, shame me, because I don't want to be one of those people who goes through life thinking like, oh, I'm looking pretty good. And you're sitting there thinking, man, this guy, he's really packing it on. So I welcome your perspective shaming. Should it come to that?
I'd let you know, but my God, if you had one of these fitness trackers, you get like 50,000 steps a day, for God's sakes.
I already remember when I went down that rabbit hole of the blood pressure machine, though, and then I was checking it like 40 times a day.
Yes,
it was really bad Edgar Allan Poe story. So I think that's bad for me to be hooked up to. Again,
right.
We come back to gadgets. Anything like that won't end well.
No, it's how you feel. That's the name of the game right there. Well, today we want to look back at a number of different cultural items of note. And let's start with an anniversary of one of the landmark albums of, I would say all of rock music history. Certainly one of the best albums of this century, celebrating its 20th anniversary, Radiohead's Kid A.
I'd agree with you with the whole overall rock history thing. I think it's that good. And it's interesting because very early on in my career, so I'm like in my mid-20s, if that, I reviewed this record in a national publication. I remember thinking at the time, like, oh, this will be a big deal. Now you'll be going places. I didn't really understand a lot of the things that I was ultimately going to end up facing. But I was completely floored by this record and the way it melded styles. I always like things, it makes sense if someone knows my work, that combines what might seem to be diverse styles, but it becomes this new style unto itself. And you had that, certainly, I think, earlier in England with the Stone Roses, who we've talked about, and that melding of rock and roll with dance culture. And this was rock and roll guitar rock with electronic music. And that could sound maybe off-putting to people, but I had posted something about this on the blog recently. I think everybody probably knows the song Idiotech. And it's this beat-driven, very electronic-based kind of song. But if you strip that down, Tom York could sing that on an acoustic guitar, and it would be a blues. There's actually a real blues underpinning to this album that I think gets overlooked. And one of the things that really impresses me about Radiohead and gives me a kind of hope is that it's high-level entertainment, but it's also at the same a kind of avant-garde art. Some people say, like, things can't be a certain thing because everybody's so stupid. But yes, but sometimes things can work on great hordes, masses of people, despite that, whether it's true or not, stupidity. I guess another good example would be Pink Floyd, right? I find that Pink Floyd is somewhat less accessible than Radiohead, but they sold a lot more records than Radiohead. Mm. So this was an album that when I first heard it, it was just immediately an all-timer to me.
And I always love the notion whenever a group or an individual artist experiences huge success, as Radiohead did with OK Computer, that they challenge themselves and go in a very different direction. And that's certainly what Thom Yorke did with this.
It is a different direction, but you'll see even when artists make those giant steps, to use that phrase of Coltrane, that there are certain things in common. I think a pretty good example is Herman Melville. We've talked about him, where you have Pierre, this novel from the end of his life that he thought was his masterpiece, that everybody thought was terrible. And you have Typee, which was this sort of potboiler for the folk, the unwashed masses, this travelogue in fiction form. You have, obviously, the highly metaphysical and also naturalistically rugged Moby Dick, and yet in the poetry, of course. And yet you always know, because there are hallmarks, and sometimes hallmarks are truths, that it's Herman Melville. And Dylan was that way. I think I'm that way. And Radiohead has become one of the few entities, artistic entities, that still do this. And they're always risking something, and they're not sacrificing accessibility. And Kid A was a wildly prescient record, where I think it fares so well in how we evaluate it, not just because of the music, but it happened to get a lot of things right about what was going to transpire in what I'll call our general devolution in the 20 years since, in that kind of fight for identity. Mm. And you have it right from the very beginning, and it sounds like a doctor bent over a birthing table with everything in its right place. Just, you get right back to those basics of, like, okay, there's an arm, there's a leg, where you have to stop and check yourself because things have gone so awry. It's like an opening song as a great intake of breath and a calming song for an album that in many ways is not going to be particularly calm.
We're talking with Colin Fleming here on Downtown Loud. Let's move to the 1940s and a terrific film produced by Val Lewton, directed by a young Robert Wise, The Body Snatcher.
Really is a terrific film. And from that Lewton cycle, it's one of the more underappreciated works. I think Cat People, obviously, gets a lot of the attention. And The Curse of the Cat People, which I just did a piece on for The Smart Set, which I think is even a better film than Cat People, because, again, it has that risk. Curse of the Cat People is a very Kid A, right? Just a sort of, like, cross-pollinate here type of film. Where is it horror? Is it child psychology? It's all these different things at once. And then you have The Body Snatcher. And Val Lewton, he didn't want to have Boris Karloff in this role because he thought of himself as an artiste, Mr. Lewton did. And Karloff was this leftover from the Universal horror cycle, and they had become pretty dire. In fact, the last film that Karloff had worked on for Universal, he likened to a monster clambake, which is right. A hilarious line, right? Like, it's almost like an outtake from Monster Mash, right? Like,
right, everybody's there.
Yeah, from that session, they're like on the beach with Elvis and dancing college girls and stuff. So Lewton didn't want to do this, but I think, and I know you're a big Karloff fan, what strikes me about this performance is based on the Stevenson story about this resurrection man who supplies, and this was a real thing, people probably know that you had to rob graves to get cadavers to do the studying and the teaching. It was very much a necessary evil. And this becomes really a film, wouldn't you say, about bullying, which is not what you'd expect it to be. And I would say this about Karloff in it. You never really think it's Karloff, do you? Like, you think of these mannerisms with Karloff and the voice and the lisp and the sibilance and all of that. But you could watch this film, like, if you weren't paying, like, a huge amount of attention, and never even think it's him. He does such a different sort of job in this. And you also have, for the last time with Karloff, Bela Lugosi. And you see him in this, and you think, he actually is not that histrionic. He has some actorly thespian chops. And I thought we'd talk about it, too, because it's, I mean, it was shot 75 years ago, mostly in November, but on a soundstage. But it's such a November film. I mean, wouldn't you agree?
I would indeed. And I was reading, because I haven't seen it in a while, but I was reading about it. And the fact that Karloff always viewed Val Lewton as the guy who rescued him and saved his career, in a sense.
Yes, he did. And it's just a partnership that we don't... I mean, Karloff's career was so long, and before he was in monster movies, or even when he had done Frankenstein, he was in like Howard Hawks, he was in Scarface. He became this sort of grandfather monster figure, and he went from being the monster to being the older, right, the mad scientist type, or sometimes this aggrieved grandfather sort of person who, oh no, my experiments went too far, how can I put things right again, that we see in things like Haunted Strangler, which he made over in England. But yes, you wouldn't think of them as this real, like, sort of duo, Lewton and Karloff, but they had the three films together. And this film, it's just, it's not discussed. It's not like the other Lewton pictures. It's not even like Seventh Victim, which was, we have Ward there from Leave It to Beaver in that one. But I just, it's such a understated, psychological horror film, really about Karloff as a sort of bully who has this power over this doctor who is kind of a mixed bag. Like, he's not a bad guy. He's also not, like, cloaked in glory and heroism and everything. And the young medical student, and there's also this subplot, which I find quite gripping, very moving, with this girl who's handicapped and the decision to help her or not to help her. Does it open a kind of Pandora's box of then you have to help everyone and you wouldn't be able to teach? And it becomes really a kind of dilemma that plays out intellectually in a way that you don't get, right, with a lot of, much as I love them, horror films. It's a film where the class, everyone can raise their hand afterwards and you can have a discussion about it.
Yeah, and I remember the first time I saw it, thinking to myself fairly early on, this is not at all what I expected. And it was for the better, because I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it tremendously. And I've probably seen it four or five times since then, but it was a surprising movie for me.
I was going to say that. It has that high, and this is something I look for, that high rewatchability quotient, because a lot of the film is, well, they're in bars. They're like, by the sea, and they're in bars. I like that, right? It's just people talking in bars, and there's the fire raging, and somebody pours the whiskey, and they have familiar terms with each other. I think that's a really successful, I don't want to say recipe for making a film, but if you want people to watch your film, or help read your book, or whatever it is, more than once, and 50 times, whatever it's going to be, I feel like you need things along those lines. And you see other things where, we've talked about this with the Twilight Zone, the episodes that you can revisit and come back to, they have that quality. They're not dependent just upon the actual action of the action and the twist ending, because you can sit down, hunker down. That's why Sherlock Holmes is so successful and so rereadable. And this is very much, if you will, a rereadable horror film.
Yeah, and the fact that you like to hear these people talk and have their discussions, and I have to think a lot of that is the strength of the source material from Stevenson.
Yes, which Lewton, using a pseudonym, worked up. Lewton was, it's ironic, because for people who don't know the story, Lewton comes in and he's doing these pictures because of our man Orson Welles, who's been kicked out of RKO. So it went from, you had genius before, now you get showmanship, which is a left-handed compliment, right? Because Lewton could, he wasn't Welles, but he could hold his own as something intellectually. And they were thinking people's horror films, but that makes it sound like, oh man, this is going to be tedious. But they're not at all, because they can be cat people, terrifying at parts. And cat people is terrifying with really no sort of budget. It's like, let's get a pool and somebody kind of whine off over here off stage where we can't see them. Somebody swim in the pool, will turn the lights, terrify people. And so there's a lot of that kind of also in this historical picture. It's set in Scotland, but it's very scary and it's very likable while being scary. And that's why I thought, just kind of like perfect for November. You've mentioned in the past to me that your favorite like fall month is, I think, November. And there are reasons that I have theories for why you said that. And this film just seemed to fit that bill really well to me.
All right, let's move on and talk about a tour. 1975, The Who and their Who by Numbers tour, which featured very few songs from the Who by Numbers album, and would also be the last chance largely for people to see Keith Moon live on stage.
You wouldn't have been able to see Moon, for instance, in 1976. So in Toronto in 76, as we'll see, they were always really great in Toronto. But the reason this was interesting to me was, well, we have the 45th year anniversary, which isn't necessarily interesting in and of itself. But when people talk about The Who as a live act, there is a focus on the 69-70 era. 70 was when, early in 1970, when Live at Leeds, of course, was recorded. And it's fascinating that you have these shows from this 1975 tour when they're not supposed to be anywhere near as good, when they are playing the best shows, some of the best shows they ever gave. And I think you can make a really credible argument that this is the best live act in the history of rock and roll. And they played, for instance, like I said, in Toronto. And if you listen to that, it's an audience recording, but it's a very clean audience recording. It's like an audience recording that's like borderline soundboard recording. That's how clean it is. You go on like YouTube, you can download it too, but if you just want a quick listen on YouTube, you'll hear a band that, had they put that out, that would be the Live at Leeds, if one knows what I mean. Mm. Keith Moon is in a kind of percussive prime when he's kind of supposed to be, right, this out of shape alcoholic who can't play at the same level anymore.
I kick myself to this day because I had a couple of friends. I was what, 17, 18, who were going to see The Who in Boston. Do you want to go? I'm like, nah, I don't think so. Large mistake on my part.
I thought you might thought, because I know you have some sort of background in Providence. You're a very peripatetic, nomadic fellow, as I've learned. And I do a lot of Google searches on you in the dark web. And I think I might have just mixed computer metaphors. It shows how little I know, right? But I just wanted to, like, roll out dark web like I knew what I was talking about.
Yeah, you know things.
But there's also a great audience recording from Providence in 1975, which is also on YouTube. But these shows, we've talked about The Who and we've talked about Zeppelin, talked about the Yardbirds. If you listen to a Led Zeppelin show, and you, or even just from 1975, if you want, just to keep it within the same sort of chronology, and then you listen to The Who, there is a fluidity to The Who that, if you were Miles Davis and you had that second great quintet and you played at the Plug Nickel in December of 1965, or you played with a completely different band at the Cellar Door in Washington in 1970, just some great live residencies, I think you would hear The Who in 75 and think, these guys are even more fluid than those two bands I had were. That's the level of interplay with these musicians. It is sort of like beyond what you get even with some of the best jazz. And of course, it's also at like 120 decibels.
Finally, we move to the world of art and a wonderful piece from John Atkinson Grimshaw, November Moonlight, that is just, man, if you want to capture November, my idea, that gray November that I love so much, boom, here it is from Grimshaw. And when was this painted?
This is 1883.
Wow. And was it Liverpool or Leeds, somewhere there?
He was Grimshaw. Well, he was born in Leeds, died in Leeds, and his thing was the painterly nocturne. And he did a lot of these nocturnes in cities, but I think the ones that have sort of stood the test of time are ones out in more so, well, this isn't really necessarily the country. This could be an outskirt of a city. But this was such a Kimball. I'd been thinking about this last year, too, when you'd mentioned the November thing. And the reason why was because it's very much what you said. And if you blow this up on your computer, it's a very tactile painting. Mm. Wouldn't you agree that it's like the rivulets of the mud in the road?
Oh, the road, the stone wall, all of it, the what appears to be brick construction of the building. Yeah.
The stone wall, you can practically imagine your hand going over the rusticated elements of it. Mm. And it's not early November, right?
No. It's snow is coming any second now.
Yeah, all the leaves are off the trees. So what we have is we have on the left a very large house. And the house is so lit up in every single window. The transom above, way at the top of this gable, is there's a lot going on in this house. And in this muddy road off around a kind of bend is the back of what looks to be a truck, and there's a shadowy figure outside the truck. And if you look very closely, you can see a little dog under the wheels, of not under the wheels, but like under the carriage itself, like it's going to hop out of the way. And so the reason it made me think of you was because it is a nocturne, but if you think about a nocturne, it's not depressing like Chopin's nocturnes. It's a music term, but this is a visual nocturne. It's not like a blues nocturne. There's something, yes, of the night and crepuscular about it, but it's not like a lament. And this is a very lively painting. There's a warmth to this painting, despite the dismal conditions and the threadbare trees and the rains that had obviously just come down and the mud and whatever this person is doing. It was, I assume, not a person of wealth like the people in this house. It's probably like a ragman or something like that, right? Or maybe who knows, but it's some sort of like lower class worker toiling away. But it captures that November, because I think about like October is like, it's the kind of schizophrenic month. It's like you have days in October where they're September days, and then you have days in October where they're November days, but they're not often like straight up October days. They're either looking back or looking forward. Whereas this is, to me, the true connoisseur of autumn. It's like November, baby. That's where it's at. And I think this is like the ultimate kind of painting for when you are taking that walk at night and it clicks that, yes, fall is, it's trending to winter, which is really when fall is most fall.
And one of the things I really like about it is that the absence of leaves on those trees somehow invites you into that house, because if the trees were in bloom, you might not see all that was going on and the warmth that appears to be coming from that house. And this is in some way like an invitation to come in from the cold.
There are a lot of windows in this house, right? There are like 14 or 15 windows that you see. This is, maybe we shouldn't be saying the term house, estate, something like that. But it's not like gargantuan. It occupies, I don't know what it is, like a 12th of the composition, and sort of subtle in a way. It's not where your attention immediately goes. It's not where the eye immediately ranges towards. You see, it's a very bright moon. And what's cool about this moon is it's a sort of ragged-edged moon, like we expect a sun to be. So it's playing off that idea. If you saw, I was out, for instance, today when I went out to D.C. to do my stairs. It was very early. And it's that time when you don't know if it's morning or it's night. The only reason we have any indication that this is not morning is because of that house. There's something going on in there. So it's not even like that late at night. It's like 8 o'clock. So it's a way to visually shorthand a lot of information to us without, of course, any text or anything like that. We know the time of year it is. We know the time of day, night it is. We know the stations of these various people. And it's like a little visual short story.
November Moonlight from John Atkinson Grimshaw. Good stuff, as always, with Colin Fleming here on Downtown Again. Order, get your hands on his brand new book out right now, Meatheads Say the Realest Things, and the chat in your life will be happy for it. Colin, we thank you as always. Let's do it again next week.
Okay, thank you.
You got a plan there. It's Colin Fleming on Downtown, ColinFlemingLit.com. Subscribe as well to his newsletter, his blog, many moments more.